welcome to a new episode of the Gamer Talk podcast. Paula Sanchez and Anthony O'Donnell are my guests today. Happy to have you on board.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, I didn't have a co-op session for a longer time now, but I really liked the chat with the previous podcast with Anthony so much that I thought he would be an amazing guest in a second one to have also with another person in here with Paula. Paula, let me hear something about you. What are you doing? Where are you working? How did you get into
the industry?
Yeah,
sure. Cool. I am currently working at D3D as a lead 3D artist since this October, actually. And I started in the industry back in the day in 2016. Right after uni, I started working at Elite 3D, which was an outsourcing studio. And I started there my career as a junior 3D artist, mainly specialized in props and environments, although it's true that from time to time, maybe I helped in the weapons department or the vehicle department, but mainly I was specialized on that. And I think thanks to the fact that it was an outsourcing studio, I luckily had the opportunity to work in really big projects and a big amount of projects in really little amount of time, because I've been working there for 5 years and a half, and I had the opportunity to work in over 12 AAAs in that time. So it was really cool because I started as a junior, and little by little I started to get more experience, more practice. I ended up being promoted to mid, and after the first 2 years and a half, more or less, it was when my bosses thought that I had maybe some skills to be able to give feedback to a small team of artists, trying to give them advice, feedback, and try to guide them on how to do stuff. So I also ended up having the job of being supervising artist. So I was basically in charge of small teams between 3 and 7 people and take care of an environment or props, depending on the project, and try to guide them on them while I still did some art. And then eventually in 2021, I was officially promoted to project lead. So the kind of job was quite similar already, but the difference was that the team was way bigger. So instead of 3-7 people, it was like 30 in the whole team from different departments, and a lot of contact with clients as well, and all that. Then in 2022, I jumped for a year and 9 months to Saber Interactive as a 3D director, in which I participated in multiple projects they have there. And yeah, this October I joined D3D, so super happy.
Nice, thanks. Anthony, my more frequent listeners might have already heard the episode with you.
I'll be super quick. Art director at D3T currently, come from an environment art background similar to Paula, love making games, love playing games, still hasn't worn off the passion in 16 years. That's pretty much me.
great. So as you both know, let's jump right into the first question. As you both know, artists are still a big thing in the industry. You need to find a way to sort out the applicants on a position, because there are so many applicants, as you know, like for a single, I heard some numbers around 200 people applying on one single job these days. So yeah, artists are still a tool to kind of check the skill set. Anthony, you have the right position, or you take a look at some artists. Maybe you can give us a short list of some do's and don'ts for people that are having artists.
I can do. Yeah, and then Paula can jump in with her point of view as well. But yeah, just to totally answer the big elephant in the room around our tests, that I don't think companies should do them unless necessary. As you said, it's usually, and for people to understand when they're used, at least when I, in my experience, at different companies would provide an art test, it's when you get down to the last handful of candidates where there's actually a couple who have very little between them, both are capable to do the job, and you just need to kind of figure out something between the skill sets that either suits a project or suits an existing discipline requirement on the team. For example, if you needed a sculptor to a certain level and that was the key piece you needed from this person joining the team, then I would do a targeted art test specifically for what I'm trying to figure out between the two candidates, because I hate the fact that art tests take time. I don't like companies giving them out just randomly as a default step one of the process. It should be the end of the process. You should have already done your validation, checked through all the CVs, portfolios. A portfolio, and this is where we're going to get onto art tests and portfolios in a minute, they should show and convey to the employer exactly what your skill level is, the role you want to go for, and evidence of that role to get the job. So your portfolio should get you most of the way there. The only time an art test should get pulled out is to just figure out who's the best candidate for a particular reason. And usually less than 2 days is advisable. I've been received and refused art tests myself that were like 4 weeks long, which is just crazy and a complete waste of someone's time. Especially if they don't get it and they give it to 50 candidates, one might complete it in that. And it's just not effective, I think, for recruiting from my point of view, but it's not effective for the people either, because you use a lot of their time, and most art tests, they can't use them in the portfolios, which I think is also bad, because then that actually takes time out of potential for them to work in the portfolios. So to go into what's actually important, it's definitely read the brief carefully, understand the role you're applying for, what they need to see in terms of the skill set to convey to them that you understand the technical skills, the creative skills, the software or workflow knowledge that you're required to know. Whether it's vegetation artist, you're not going to make rocks. Texture materials, you're going to want to show a good process there. Then leave time to check over all aspects of the work as well. That's quite important, that when you do the art test, don't rush it, try and plan so you do the bulk of the work in the allotted time, but you leave yourself an appropriate amount of time to present, write up, organize all the files as requested, and deliver it exactly in the format requested as well. Because usually with these tests, they're also trying to see if you can follow instructions. So if they expect source files in a certain format, certain naming conventions, certain file sizes and types, you should definitely pay attention to all that, because that may make the difference between you and another candidate. Yeah. That's pretty much the main ones for me. And the last one is actually a don't for me, is don't add anything to impress someone that's not supposed to be in there, because the point of this is, do you follow instructions? You do not want to add in something for fun and go, hey, I added in this hard surface prop with the vegetation test because I want to show I can do hard surface. That won't be appreciated. That's something you just don't do. You keep it focused. That's my two cents.
What is your experience, Paula, with artists? So have you done some already?
As an artist, you mean, or as a... I did. I must say that I was lucky and I didn't have to face many. I think I did between two and three artists in my life. Luckily successful, so that was good. But as part of the recruitment team, I also gave artists sometimes. I think in all the companies I work for, artists weren't mandatory at all, which I think it's good. I do agree with Anthony. Like, artists take a lot of your time, and most of the time people is even working at the same time. And I think it really has to be because you as a recruiter have a doubt on whether that's the correct person to join the team, or whether the person has the knowledge required on the role, and not just to filter people. Because I do agree that that's not the best way to go, I think. So I do agree with Anthony on that. I also experience sometimes like that you send artists also sometimes to junior, but not necessarily because they lack experience, but more because maybe their portfolio doesn't have enough information for you to decide if that person has the level to join a production. Because sometimes, especially juniors or people that come out of studies or whatever, have beautiful art pieces in their art station, but maybe the topology is not optimized, maybe the UVs are not optimized, maybe they are absolutely unable to do that on a specific deadline. So I think in those cases where maybe through the art station you don't have that information, maybe because they didn't upload wireframes, or maybe because they didn't upload layouts of textures, it's quite interesting to try to filter a bit on that and see if you also as a lead or as an art manager or whatever, you're also going to have the time. If that person is not experienced enough yet, I think it's important that you know which is the exact level of that artist so that you can know if you have enough time to guide that person. Because if in the end you try to give that person a chance, but you as a manager, as a leader, whatever, you don't have the time to teach that person is never going to be able to reach to production with the quality and the times that you need. So I think artists are also quite useful in that regard for juniors as well. And as I said, maybe not for all of them. Maybe if there is enough information in the art station, that's perfect and let's go. But if not, yeah, that could be also a situation where an artist could be needed. And something that I think it's really important about, apart from what Anthony mentioned about the do's and do not, would be planify a lot. I think sometimes when we receive an art test and we read the brief, we just want to run and rush and start doing stuff. But I think it is worth it to spend even 2 hours, three, whatever, just thinking, planifying what you're going to do. Especially, like, the bigger the art test is, the better. Like, for example, if you have a huge environment, of course, you will need more planification than if you have just a small prop. But I think planifying things is really important, because the problem is that if you just rush and start doing it, it might be that you end up losing more time, because it might be that you need to redo all your work, because at some point you realize that, hey, maybe I didn't need to sculpt all this because I'm going to overlap UVs, or because I'm going to reuse this mesh here or this mesh there, or I could have created a trim sheet for this environment instead of doing this like with another method, right? So I would say planifying things and spend X amount of time on that is super important. And also another thing that I think is super, super important is trying to balance quality with the technique you use. Because maybe you spend a lot of time in creating stunning art, but it might be that because you spend so much time in that piece, then the rest of the environment is unfinished, or that the rest of the things are just with a way worse quality. So even though you could say, well, yeah, but I showed that I'm capable of doing this at this quality, so I could be able to do that. Yeah, but you're not being able to do that on that time. So maybe for production is not what you need. So I think consistency and trying to keep that balance is a must. And then something that it's advisable as well, try to hit times. And if at some point you realize that you are not being able to add everything you wanted to add in that art test, just maybe add a text, a file with a text where you write your ideas and explain how would have you approached things with a bit more time. Because at least you show that you have that knowledge, but you just lack time. And maybe sometimes the recruiters or the leads that check the test even say, okay, we will give you this X amount of time and let's see how does everything looks in the end. So yeah, I think hitting time at first is a must, but then if you are not 100% happy with the result, just share your ideas on how could you improve it, because it might be that they give you the opportunity. Not do's, yeah, I think it's more or less what I said, like the opposite of what I said, like try to not be inconsistency, try to not deliver something unfinished, try to deliver on time. I think that would be it.
Yeah, because I did have an experience with an art test previously, and they actually intentionally gave you one that took too long. And you weren't supposed to finish it. That was the test, but I ended up finishing it. I was like, well, I got a weekend, I'll finish it. Yeah. So it's one of the only people to actually submit it finished. But that's just because I crunched and that's bad. I was going to mention as well, surprisingly, art tests are not just for juniors and mids. Like to join the 3T, I actually did do an art direction art test as well. It was small and focused to do a pitch overnight of a game to kind of show how I can pitch and ideate and come up with an idea at short notice. It was a bit of a weird test, but even at this level you still get art test right, especially the higher you go and the more expensive you are and the more of an impact you're going to have on a team, people need to be even more sure. So I'm actually even more convinced you're going to get more tests as you go up through the ranks, depending on the companies and their due diligence, rather than in the kind of beginning or middle of your career, I think. And for good reason, because
That's
at that
cool.
level, you can either make or break a team, and it's something we can get into later. But from lead upwards, you can literally ruin a team if you
Yeah.
don't do it correctly or get the wrong person. As much as you can make the team and develop them and do an amazing job, it can work the other way.
Yeah, now that you mentioned, I think it's completely right, but because now that I think about it, both art tests that I did were for senior role positions. I never did one as a junior, I never did one as a mid. So, yeah, it's true.
So yeah, I often had the conversation also here on a podcast. Is a artist still needed? Is it just because I got some artists, I didn't do them, but they were like super crazy. I'm like, who? You have like 48 hours for a task that is like doing a normal mid artist in like 2 weeks.
Yeah,
So
that's crazy.
this was like, why are you doing? I don't get it. So maybe make the task smaller.
Yeah,
I
I
don't
mean, we do our
know.
test. That's what it is. Whenever D3T does one, I do them custom every
Sure.
time. So I do
Yeah.
the art test to be less than 2 days, and I
Good.
do each one unique to the person I'm trying to test, and I assess the particular skill that I'm trying to assess, and I'd actually tell them like, this is what I'm trying to check. Focus on this to give them the best chance of success. So there's a focus on, I need to check your topology, your UVs, your material definition, your ability with design or ability with Houdini, whatever it might be. That's how we tend to do it.
Yeah,
And usually in our
perfect.
test, when we do use it, is when we absolutely love a candidate, because we give it out at the end of the process, not the beginning. So we would have already interviewed all the candidates, and there could be one who has a culture fit and a person is fantastic, really passionate and has the skills, but maybe there's one thing we didn't see that another candidate has. And it doesn't mean they can't do it because they didn't show it in the portfolio. It's just not there. So we need to test that one thing to kind of get them over the line. So it's, yeah, I think that's the responsible way
Perfect.
to do
So
it.
yeah.
Otherwise, if it's big, pay will be the other way to do it. But companies don't like that. And
Yeah,
that'll make the
yeah.
company not give it out because then they have to pay for it.
Exactly. So yeah, let's say art tests should be handmade, like at D3
It makes the
top.
most sense because you're doing it for a reason, and to do it arbitrarily just because of a recruitment process is wrong. If they're the ones that are getting done, you're wasting everyone's time. Recruiters' time, applicants' time, reviewers' time. It's just not useful.
Yeah. Cool. And also, sometimes I didn't even get an answer back of my art test. This is also like
But
super
that's where I
crazy.
think
You
it's done as an
spend.
arbitrary thing, because then someone kind of just arbitrarily looks at it and goes, yeah or no, and it gets pre-vetted rather than going to someone who will review that. Usually for us, we will feedback on an art test directly.
So you don't even get a
Yeah,
no,
that's
which
bad.
is like,
Yeah,
I don't get
especially when
it.
you put the effort, it's a bit like heartbreaking, Not
right? It's
totally.
like, I don't know.
I mean, for me, the bare
That is
minimum,
like
if you're willing to give it out, you should be willing to give the feedback as
absolutely.
a courtesy and respectfulness
Exactly.
to the
Yeah.
person who's done it in the first place, at a
Absolutely.
minimum. Even if it's not successful, to at least give them pointers on, and I've done it in the past, where I'll give back 2 to 4 pages A4 back on the art test, successful or not, to go, this is what worked well, this is what you need to improve on, this is what you may have missed out with, and just be brutally honest. But at least they get some value from that, and the experience was something for them. But the industry as a whole has to get better at it, and people need to also understand, instead of just going against our tests, hopefully this conversation, that understand from a hiring point of view, they are actually necessary in certain situations. And as much as I would love every candidate to be bulletproof in terms of they're a great person, they're professional, they're organized, their work shows every single thing you need to
The all
see,
around.
sometimes as a project fit, that we could have an artist who's absolutely exceptional. But the project might be a bit stylized and their style might not quite be that, but they might be interested or have said in the interview they would love to try it someday. If that's the case, that's when an art test would actually be a really good thing to assess that one element.
All right. Yeah, so speaking about juniors and or also getting into the industry, so how would you like say to get better as a 3D artist or as a junior when like starting out? Are there any good advice you have on hand? Anthony? Or
Paula. You can go first, Paula.
Okay. I think like the only way to get better in art, it's by practicing. You can check as much theory as you want, that if you don't put it in practice, first of all, you're not going to retain it. And second thing, you are probably going to run into issues, because there are always issues in 3D everywhere. And you need to go through that back testing or debugging or problem solving. So practicing is the only way, basically. And I especially advise, and especially when you are starting, to practice both in and out the office, outside the office, because it might be that, especially if you're working in an in-house studio, it might be that in outsourcing or co-development, the situation is a bit different, because you switch projects quite quickly. So it might be that in shorter amount of time you can test different styles, different pipelines, different whatever. But if you're an artist that started in an in-house studio at the beginning of a project, let's say a AAA project that could last for 5 years, you're going to be 5 years of your career in which most of the times you could even end up considered a senior in some places. And it might be that in your whole career you only tested a single pipeline. So I think it's really, really important to also try, especially when you're starting, to practice at home, do something portfolio. It doesn't need to be big. It doesn't need to be like a whole game or a massive environment. It could be little stuff where you put in practice new techniques that you saw done in internet, in someone's tutorials, or with a new software that just have been released. But I think that's really, really important and the only way to get better. Another thing that I would say that is super important, it's to search for reference. People that you admire, people that you think that their artwork looks nice and that at some point you would like to be able to do that. And try to have that as a reference and analyze and compare that with your work and see, okay, what am I missing? What is different in my artwork in comparison to theirs? Why I'm not being able to make it look so good, right? And I think by analyzing that, you might end up seeing, okay, maybe I'm lacking a bit more attention to detail, or my roughness values in my textures are not good enough, or I don't have enough color variation, my lighting skills maybe are not that good, and maybe I should practice this. I think comparing, checking, and having a reference is super important. And then the last thing I think would be try to be up to date with new pipelines and techniques and technology. This is quite related to the practicing part that I said at the beginning. But basically in 3D, there are always multiple ways to reach the same objective. There are always multiple ways to do stuff. And I think that there's not a single correct one. It's more the best fit for what you're looking for. So I think to be able to always choose the best method for each thing, you need to have a broader knowledge and try to be aware of how things could be done.
Cool. I was playing advice bingo, and you've managed to get all my points, which is good. That shows it's good, right? Because basically, yes, practice was my first one as well, only because that is the only way in any arts, any craft, to get good at it is to literally just do the job. So many people focus on software, which you're right, Paula, that is correct, to at least be up to date of workflows and software. But for me, listening and learning from others and be a sponge is very important. And to your advice, what you mentioned about getting reference and being objective and sitting back and trying to objectively look at what you're doing and make sure that you're trying to achieve your goals on the asset in terms of the visuals is important. But I think sometimes artists, if you don't know and you're not aware of something because you've not experienced it or looked at it in that way, the only way to get that experience is by speaking to peers, joining Discords, getting opinion from someone else or a mentor or someone who does know and can kind of communicate that to you. Because I think that was one of the biggest struggles for me as an artist, is you're limited by your own knowledge. So especially for new 3D artists or graduates or juniors, if they're wanting to get into the industry, it's just getting as much information as you can from as many people as you can to grow you, will just leapfrog you the right way through the process. Because it's when things like that click and you start to look at things differently and you look at things breaking it down into shapes and forms. And this is where art fundamentals becomes really important. So people should not just look at software workflows in 3D, they should also be looking at old art theory, composition, shape and form, lighting. There's many resources out there for this to leverage and look at. That's what's going to sharpen that artistic eye and allow you to look at something in its component parts. So, as Paula mentioned, you'd be looking at an asset and you'd look at the material definition, the roughness, how much contextual wear, why is it there? Ask yourself these questions. What is the narrative of this asset? What's happened? And all these things are super important for you then to convey and to use tools in your work to hit a higher level. Because a lot of work from aspiring artists, even myself at the beginning, you'd have, we'd say, a metal painted can or something, and you just do metal paint. I'm done. There'd be no blending in between, there'd be no context to it. It'll be what it's supposed to be. It's very binary. It's like it's there, I did it. And that's how you begin. But what makes something truly special and good and adds the artistic touch is that extra consideration, that extra time to really think about what you're producing. And this works on a micro scale of a can, and it works on a macro scale of a level. So I think this is tuning artistic abilities is going to be something I think is important in the future as well. I'm going to say the bad word, but with AI, procedural tools, all these kind of software is improving in time. The thing that people are going to have to use more than raw technical skill or knowledge of a software will be their artistic sensibilities. So I think the industry is going to have a sea change and a shift over the next few years where it might get easier, arguably, to make the art, but it's going to also get harder because you're going to have to be better at the art side of it and less at the button pressing technology side of it. Because when I started out, you had to be kind of good at both because the art was working because you were constrained by technology. You could only have so many polygons, so many textures, there was only so much detail in texel density, so you kind of had to make the most of what you had. Nowadays, I think it's easier and quicker to get something that looks nice, but that doesn't mean it looks great. That comes down to the artistry
So back to roots,
a
kind of,
little
huh?
bit. I see, that's how I see it personally. That's how I see it happening. I think artistic skills are actually going to become the battleground of the next 5 to 10 years, and especially at a higher level for leads, art directors, and others. It's going to be more about creating more immersive, coherent, brilliant worlds, and less about just painting by numbers and doing what the software says. And it is going to separate the best games from just regular standard quality games. You can see that now when you play something, it's usually great art direction and artistry that makes it jump above everything else rather than raw power. You can have all the technology and money in the world, doesn't mean it's going to be good. And that's a shot at AI.
Yeah, that's
But
true.
that's
I think you did a
so
really
true.
good point there. And also, actually asking for feedback and asking for a second opinion, I think it's important, but not always, only when you're starting, but I think always. Because I think what we as artists have is that, I don't know, it's like the eye gets tired of seeing the same thing for hours, for days. And I think that always having at least a second pair of eyes to give you advice and to give you like a fresh view to your artworks is always super beneficial. So yeah, I think that's something that
Don't be afraid.
exactly. And sometimes I don't know, it might be that someone tells you something that you might agree, might not, but most of the times you are probably going to learn a lot thanks to that. And you are going to realize, I forgot about this, and actually it's true, and now it looks way better. So yeah, I think I still do it nowadays. Every time I do something, either at work or portfolio, I always try to seek for advice and seek for a second opinion, because I think it always improves the final result.
Yep, that's company plug time. That's something we do at D3T as well, as Paula knows, that if we do work, if I do work, she does work, or anybody else on the team, we just have kind of common artist chats, so we can just drop it in and go give some feedback. And anyone on the team at any level can just give input without context of the project or anything else. And it's really useful because sometimes as they spot things, because they have a different perspective, they've been working on something tangentially similar for like 6, 7 months, and they might have really good insight about something, whether it's color blocking or use of detail, noise, contrast around the asset, or ratios and design, and God knows where it comes from. But every person has that different view, and I think that's something that I've always listened to, and it's something I value. And if people really want to learn this industry, it's just surround yourself with peers and better people, and just absorb everything all the time.
Anthony, you mentioned great games. And a few sentences before, what have your highlights been in the gaming industry this year? apart from the layoffs
I'm
and all
presuming
the
as a
other.
fan, you mean, right? Rather than,
More as a gaming
yeah, I
fan.
mean, I was really looking forward to Space Marine 2 because I like Warhammer, and that's delayed, so I'm sad. I've been recently playing Alan Wake 2, just we worked on the remaster, but
Oh, how
it's
is it?
gorgeous. But again, it's great art direction. The tech is great too because Remedy do great tech, but it's the consistency, and I think that'll be one thing. God of War as well. I was playing that earlier in the year. RoboCop. Surprisingly, I was playing that recently as well. I'm really enjoying
Oh, I
RoboCop,
started
yeah.
that playing last week.
So I think that's really cool, given it's kind of a small team, and I'm assuming a smaller budget than most massive games. And I think they've done really well. They've done a really good job of being consistent with the art, consistent with the quality across the kind of different disciplines across the game, that it feels coherent. And this is where people will get bored of me saying it time and time again, but consistency is one of the biggest hallmarks of a consistent presentation or quality presentation for a game. That for me, if something stands out as being poor, it's usually going to be an inconsistency across something, whether it's the animation's high fidelity, the art is not, the art is inconsistent within itself if things don't quite match or sit well together.
That's
But I think
true.
that's, to me, that's always a big one, and I always try and get right on every project as best as you can. It can be difficult at times, but our team aiming for consistency is their responsibility of the team to at least have that part of the presentation correct. And as long as everything else joins in that effort, games usually come out quite polished. But yeah, maybe some examples with God of War and RoboCop and Alan Wake 2 have been immediate ones. I've re just pre-ordered or ordered the Avatar Frontiers of Pandora because that looks amazing. So I'll be picking that up
Oh,
tomorrow, give that a try
yeah.
as well. But it turns out, actually, this year I got my PlayStation wrap up and I played 48 games. And I did not finish 48 games. I did not
48.
finish 48 games. And I've easily played 10 or 15 games on Switch and Xbox as well. So I'm sure I'm pushing over 60. So my gaming habits, unfortunately, refer to taking screenshots, playing about 2 to 4 hours of every game that I get my hands on, trying to understand pipelines, process, and what they are. And I file all that away into my bank of information that I need to use in the future. I take note of frame
That's
rates,
great.
resolutions, things that did well, things that didn't do well, because all that just serves as do's and don'ts for me when deciding these things for a future project.
So, are you still enjoying playing video
No, I
games,
do.
or is it?
I still, I do.
Oh,
I do that for a first
that's
hour or
great.
two, and
That's
then
good
I
to
just
hear.
shut off and I just play it, and it's great.
Okay.
So,
Perfect.
what about you, Paula?
Perfect.
Have you
Well,
managed to play it all this year?
yeah, I'm sadly not as gamer as you, but I'm making my efforts to be back at that. As a gamer, I had a quite focused taste, let's say, into action adventure games. I'm trying to get out of.
Can't go wrong
Sorry,
with
you agree
that.
with that?
You can't
No,
go
no,
wrong with
no.
the action
No, and
adventure.
I love them because I think they give me a bit the peace to, first of all, because I don't feel like they consume all my time, because what happens with me and open worlds is that I feel that that's a never-ending thing, that once I get in, I'm not gonna be able to do anything else in my life for a long, long time. Or just it's gonna take years to
True.
finish it. So in general, open worlds, I don't like them that much as a gamer because of that, although there are exceptions, and I will let you know now. But the action adventure games also give me like the tranquility that I know that it's gonna end up in X amount of hours, that they're not too crazy in general. I have also the pace to be able to admire art calmly, although now with the camera mode in most of the games, that's not an issue anymore. But yeah, originally that was a thing as well, and I love the different kind of gameplays, maybe mixing platforms with puzzles, with this kind of stuff, and storytelling is super, super important for me. I'm trying. I haven't played much this year. That's the honest truth. But now for Christmas, I'm absolutely decided to get Alan Wake 2. Because I played the first one back in the day, and I did liked it a lot, and I admired Remedy a lot as a company. I think they do really good games, and I think I'm gonna like it, Alan Wake 2. The second one, and this is the big exception, is Spider-Man 2, which is an open world, but I think it's the only open world game that I truly love. I played Spider-Man 1, I played Miles Morales, and I absolutely love them. In the first one, I almost end up having
Same,
platinum.
yeah.
Cup. So yeah,
I
so
did.
I
I
was
did.
quite
Yeah.
I don't know, I think they just make it super super fun. Really cool gameplay, cool to move around the city, amazing art, a lot of different cool stuff. So yeah,
And the story's good too, right?
the
And the
story's good
actual
too. Yeah
interactions with the
yeah
world and the
yeah
pacing is great. And as you said, it
yeah
doesn't feel like a super repetitive do everything repeatedly and gets boring. It's they managed to balance that really well.
exactly. And
And also the animation,
yeah,
I really like the
yes, they're
animation
awesome.
because it's so fluent. It just feels well. It's well balanced. And in comparison to that, I played yesterday. I played Gotham Knights,
I've also played this
and
this year.
it's in terms of animation, it's so bad. It feels like super clunky and slow, and it doesn't do what I want. It's like so. It's so slow paced. I'm not a big fan
I
of
do
the
like
game
some of the environment art. I'll
in
go out in that. Some of the lighting looks great. It's really nice.
comparison. Then, yeah, this is all fine,
But
and
it doesn't
also
hook you the
like
same
the story
that
is
when you've played
cool.
them back to back, it doesn't
But
grab you in the exact same way Spider-Man does.
yeah, and also compared to the old Batman
Yeah.
trilogy, they are like far
Because that's one
apart
thing I did
in
finish
terms
this year,
of
because I finished Arkham Knight and
fun.
then I went to Gotham Knights and I was like, ooh, what's different? And I literally finished it the day before I started Gotham Knights. That's how late I am with my gaming. Because
Oh,
my friend Dave sent me a nice text today when I sent him there's a price drop on the Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. And I literally quote him on this one. He said, I totally forgot you have finished and got the platinum for all the stuff you currently own. And I was like, nice, thank you. So he's taking digs. He knows how I game. But
yeah, I'm a
yeah,
trophy
sadly I'm
collector.
not. I'm a
I'm yeah.
research monkey. I love getting in, playing with it, and just seeing the beautiful worlds. And I'd love to finish everything I play, I would, but then
Okay.
I would limit how much I can play, so.
Yeah,
That's
I
true,
think
yeah.
Avatar: Frontiers of Pandora, it's going to be a must for me at some point, even if it's open world as well. But I love the universe, and the art looks amazing, so that's definitely. And I think it's so different from many kind of games that are out there nowadays because of the universe and their how rich the nature and all the different creatures it's. So I think that's. And I think also in terms of gameplay, probably it's going to be quite varied as well. So yeah, that.
Is it bad that I'm buying it just for the vegetation, right? I sort of walk around and play with that.
I heard this looks fantastic. I have it. I have it around here. I didn't install it yet, but I will probably. So let's not hope it will be Far Cry with
I'm not against
Avatar
that either. I think that's not too
dressed
bad.
on
It's not
it.
a bad. It's not a bad starting
Yeah,
point.
yeah, yeah. I always liked Far Cry. Yeah, let's speak about your position a bit. So, Paula, you're a lead. Anthony, you're art director. So you always need to take care of the team and make sure everyone is happy. So how are you taking care of the artists that they are not burned out, especially in outsourcing where they are like huge time limits and everything needs to be done yesterday and everything needs to be super quick and yeah. I'd like to hear your approach on that.
Yeah, you want to go, Anthony, or?
Yeah, I can dive in. Just be careful, my dog might bark in the background. We'll be fine. Yeah, usually, I mean, again, I have different experience across different companies with this one and different experience over the 16 years I've been in the industry. But the first one for me is planning, that you need to properly scope and plan. Now, as much as I like to methodically plan, I also think you need to take into account the phase of the project. So, again, production will come after me for this. But if you're in pre-production, I think granular planning is pointless because you're trying to find the creative, you're trying to find the pipelines. You should have larger milestones of like pipelines need to be ready in 3 to 6 months, or we're going to do an investigation phase for something for a month. So properly scoping this kind of work and knowing what the outcomes to be expected are and making sure you hit those outcomes helps reduce the need for all this. I mean, D3T has a decent, strong production team. We, as leads and art director, help the production team scope things properly. If clients come in and do want us to do something that's quite crazy or wouldn't fit within the scope, we message that back to them and we give them very valid information as to why. In terms of, obviously, we can say we'll give you an extra five people, you can have it for a bit more money at the same time, or we can go a bit longer with a smaller team. So it works out in different ways. But that kind of communication and planning and scoping is the main way to do it. In terms of day to day, at an artist level, we track artists not in a timekeeping manner, but we just make sure that we are aware of when their tasks are going to hit. We know when to expect something in for review. If something's a day or two late, as long as it's to quality and done, that's fine. If something's late but not where it needs to be, then we have to have a conversation as a lead or an art director with the people to assess why it's not on time, what problems have they hit, what support do they need. If they do need support, then getting it to them ASAP, whether that's mentoring them with a different artist, whether that's giving them time to skill up on something. So this, it depends on the case. It's case by case basis. But yeah, planning, checking on it day to day. If something is starting to derail, getting on it as quickly as possible. It's just all responsible behavior for game development. I mean, games are hard enough to make as it is. It's never smooth. Stuff will go wrong, which is why I always look at the bigger plan rather than getting caught in the minutiae of day to day. Oh, this asset has to be done by 12 o'clock tomorrow. It's like, as long as I get it roughly at the right time and we hit the date that we need to hit in terms of like pre-production, vertical slice, alpha, beta, GM, as long as we hit those dates, that's what I have in my mind to make sure we hit them and anything we need to do to mitigate. Sometimes it could actually be getting someone's support. So if someone's working on a level or two people, they're falling behind for whatever reason, whether it's people, holidays, sickness, stuff has changed because creative direction has changed or a feature is difficult to nail, we will then move more resource to that to help them out, or myself directly or a lead will step in and help them out to push them along. So yeah, different ways. Paula might have other options as well, but yeah, I think a lot of it is just being a responsible game developer and listening to the team, checking regularly with the team, and also let the team estimate their own work is the other way to do it. That I will sanity check estimates, but I will never tell someone how long it takes to do something. I will get their estimate first. I will sound check it against my own knowledge and experience. If I'm unsure, I will ask somebody else to double triple check it. And if we all agree it's sensible, then we're good. If there's any issues, we go back to the artist just to triple check it's all fine. Yeah, and I think that a lot of that back and forth and communication is a key way to minimize any kind of crunch. And for D3T, we don't. We just outright don't crunch. I manage to do the extra hour here and there because I like game dev. But it's not mandatory and it's something that we don't necessarily need to do. But sometimes things just flare up and you need to organize it. That's game dev.
Yeah, I think Anthony summarized it really well in there. So just to not repeat the same, I would go more into the soft skill part of the lead artist role, how important it is to be able to create trust with your team, let them know that you are someone you can someone they can approach whenever they have an issue. We are not machines. We are people, and sometimes we have bad times or we struggle with an asset. It doesn't even need to be because of work per se, or because we don't know how to face it, maybe because of personal life. And I think a lead is also that person that should create that trust and that bounce with the people to let them know that you can be approached whenever. Because the more trust you create with them, it will be the better for the production. Because if they feel confident, and if they trust you to be able to raise their hands and say, "Hey, I'm not being able to produce well because I have personal issues, or maybe because I'm struggling with this asset because I really don't know how to figure this out," you are going to be able to put solutions quick. You're going to be able to maybe bring another artist to help out, or maybe switch, or maybe assign him another task that he doesn't struggle with. And that way you are going to make sure that it doesn't have an impact in your production and in the final development of the game. So I think that's quite important as a lead, to create that trust, and basically invite them to be open and honest. And that there won't be any, like, that the best thing they could do for themselves and for the whole team is just to be transparent with what they're going through if they struggle with something or whatever. And also another thing that could be done is simply trying to balance their tasks and maybe well, of course you need to know your team. Basically, you need to know each individual artist because maybe they are all part of the environment art team, but it might be that one of them is better doing materials and the other one is better just creating structures and the other one is better in doing foliage or whatever. So The more you know your team, your artists individually, the better you will be able to assign tasks to them, and the more productive you will be able to be as a team, because they would do it better in those tasks that are assigned to them. And maybe it's always good to try to balance if they have a really demanding, complex task, whatever, maybe because the times in there are more demanding. This happens maybe more with outsourcing when you have like really sometimes like in outsourcing, you can discuss a bit deadlines, but sometimes you cannot go too far away from what the client imposes. So it might be that some of the tasks are not well estimated already from the beginning, or that are extremely tight. So if you are aware of that and you know who's doing that task, try to give that artist afterwards a task in which they can be a bit more relaxed and calm so that the bucket doesn't get full. And basically try to help your artist to be a bit more like in waves at least, and that they are not constantly in the highest level of working, because that's going to
game dev stress.
Yeah, game dev. Yeah, and they can end up in burnout and stuff. So
exactly.
Yeah,
that's absolutely excellent answer for that one. That's true, 100%. That's exactly how it should be done. Doesn't always happen that way, sadly. But the one excuse we don't accept is Baldur's Gate just came out and I'm struggling to create art because I'm busy gaming for 100 plus hours. That's not allowed. That doesn't fly. So as much as I'd like to say that's allowed, that's probably the one thing that won't fly in game dev. It's like, oh, I can't make games, I'm too busy playing. It's like, oh, no. Everything else is fine, but that's a no.
So are you guys self-taught? I think we spoke about that in the last episode.
Yeah, no,
I'm
right?
Kind of.
Yeah, I'm a bit strange. I'm 50-50. I'll explain that really quick. So for me, I started off like a 9-year-old just doodling and sketching as most kids do, which wasn't really formal training. But when I hit around 15, at a guess, I ended up just absorbing any information I could get. So, you know, art books of how to draw, like traditional art books, because game dev didn't exist in that way back then. So I would take any information I could get of any topic, whether it's architecture, anatomy, watercolor painting, charcoal drawing, whatever. I'd absorb everything I could for years. For me, I then went to a college to get a diploma, so not a degree. So it was like a 3-year course and we got a diploma, but that covered classic animation, 2D animation, 3D animation, and a bit of Max. From there, it was a lot of forums and tutorials. So it was a lot of heavy self-teaching beyond getting that diploma. I never went to degree level when it came, because I know where this question is going, by the way. You're going to get into uni versus self-taught. So I never actually got to degree level. Then I went, got a job in the industry and worked for many years. But then while I was in the industry, I actually had the opportunity while at Evolution at Sony to do a master's degree, but I only went as far as postgraduate diploma again for reasons. So I ended up twice only going as far as diploma, and then I realized I don't need this and it's not giving me any benefits. So then I just didn't go the rest of the way. So I have a bit of a different view. I can see both sides because I've experienced it at different levels in different ways. But I'd say my journey has been heavily self-taught for the actual skills that got me where I am, but I did take formal education to diploma level twice to kind of get that other side of it as well, which is more academic and dissertation driven and just a bit different.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was me. So I definitely have a nuanced approach to this one.
The industry is so fast. You are self-taught at a specific point in your career.
Because, you have to be.
Everything you learned, like software-wise, is, or maybe pipeline-wise, is long gone, especially for people that are long in the industry. Yeah. So, Paula,
in my case, I did do a university degree. I think in my case, the reason why I decided is because I didn't know how to start otherwise in the industry. And it's true that maybe it's a family thing as well, or how you are educated. For my family, it was important to have a degree. I was lucky enough to be able to do it, so I did it. And I don't regret. I think it gave me a base to start with, not regarding level necessarily, because I can easily say that I learned more in my first 3 months working at the company, at my first company, than in 4 years of studying the degree. But it's true that it gave me a base about how to be a bit more autonomous later on where should I search for tutorials, how to approach companies maybe, how to face the basics of the 3D world or the video games world. And it also gives you a lot of contacts. Like now I have a lot of friends that used to study with me back in the day, and that nowadays they are working in many different companies across the world. So that's really, really cool. And they give you a lot of advice about your portfolio as well, the things that you should try to change or not, or include. So I don't regret about having studied there. It's true that I also worked quite hard. Like for me, I always try to do the extra mile and not just do the bare minimum, because I think that's also a risk that some people do when they are doing studies. Like, well, let's try to do the bare minimum to pass. And the things that probably in uni, even getting a 10 out of 10 as a mark, it's barely like working level, professional level. So if you are pointing to getting the bare minimum, it's for sure not gonna be enough to get a job in the future. So I think having studies and having people to guide you, it's super valuable, and it's cool, and it helped me a lot back in the day. If we are talking about the level of the of what you are taught, maybe universities and these kind of big schools where you have many students in a class, and maybe teachers that maybe they even never worked in the industry, or maybe they worked but many years ago and they are no longer up to date with the techniques that are used nowadays. That's a risk, and that's never going to give you enough level to join a studio unless you do either the extra mile on your side, or what happens a lot. And actually, I have this a lot because on a side, apart from the office work at D3T, I do some mentoring for some years now, and I have a lot of students that come from university, from having studied a degree, or not necessarily university, but a degree somewhere, or a private course or whatever, and still they tell me, hey, I've been sending CVs or portfolio for months or already, and I cannot land a job. So how can I approach this? And there we work with personalized training, focusing on what they're really missing to make sure that they do that next step. So I think it depends. If you are searching for a really good high quality level, then I would recommend either just being self-taught, or maybe go to mentoring people that you know that has experience in the industry and that they are up to date. If you are searching for, yeah, just to have a degree, basically, because it's true that sometimes it opens door. Like in the past, I was considering to move to different countries for work, and it's true that the single fact of having a degree that made my life way easier to be able to get a visa, for example. So I mean, everything has its pros and cons. I do think that having that degree would make my life easier when thinking of moving to another country. If we're speaking about level, there are probably other ways that could give you better results for sure.
Cool. That kind of tallies with the list I had here as well. But you're right with the peer group aspect in terms of being able to bounce ideas off people, meet and network with people. And that was one thing I took away from my experience as well, which is great. When I guess when we both studies, mentorships were not a thing. And as you said, you mentor at the moment as well. And I've recently been doing it for a limit break. And I think mentorships, if I were to do it again, I would definitely just go the self-taught route of mentorships personally, because in the end, it's portfolio that gets you the job. If you are in a position where you can do a degree and it's fine to do and you want to enjoy it, that's totally valid because it gives you time as well. Because people who I know have done self-taught are very driven and they have to really work hard and focused. And from a point we had earlier in terms of people improving, if someone is self-taught and they don't know what the weaknesses are, you can work 2 years flat and get nowhere. Versus
Absolutely.
someone who in a uni, or if you have a mentor, can kind of go, oh, well, your wireframe's bad, your topology's bad, you need to, your eye for detail or relative proportion or your eye for material definition is not great.
Work on this, work on
And
that.
that's a crucial one for me, is when you're deciding whether to go self-taught or not, you need a self-awareness. Like, it's easy for me to say now that I'd go self-taught, but at the time, I know I didn't know half the things I know now. And that's part of the journey, is you just don't. And what seems easy to me now and second nature is something I would have killed for back then because I did not understand it as I do now. And it's only time and experience and doing something for 10,000 hours plus, you kind of realize, oh, actually, this is what was stopping me the entire time. And now, if we make, Paul might have the same experience, if we make art now, I can make something right once at 10 times faster than I could have 10 years ago. And it's just crazy in my mind that, especially growing up in the industry and working across different generations, when I would have been working on the PlayStation 3, and you look up to Naughty Dog and the stuff they were doing with Uncharted, and I was like, oh my God, I wish I'd make something like this one day. But then you actually look at your career and realize you've made stuff like that and better over years. And then you kind of look back and go, oh, I have come further. This has improved. And it's weird. That happens in such a natural way, you kind of forget. But all of that is the learning, the absorption, the reapplication of knowledge, the growth that you self-taught. You can't rush it. If some people who are amazing can do self-taught and do it in 6 months, and I've seen those people, I know these people who are working in companies now. But I think you need to be looking at yourself. Looking, if you're one of these people who's very driven, as Paula said, who goes the extra mile, who's aware of where you need to improve, and who has a focused plan to get better. And there's never been a better time in terms of resources. The internet is just full of good resources and groups and discords and forums to get the information you need to actually build a educational plan or development plan to say, I'm going to work in like trim sheets, tileables, shaders, environments, level art, props, hard surface, normal baking, organic, vegetation. You could make a massive list, procedural art and Houdini, designer, you name it. You could make a huge list of things you want to do in your self-taught studies and work. And if you're disciplined enough, you could absolutely get where you need to go. No one's going to stop you. And the problem with unis is they try to give you a wider breadth. And that would be the difference for me, really. The core difference here is you don't get a degree. You can't get the easier visa, like Paula mentioned. And it won't open those doors as simply. But the difference for me between self-taught and unis is unis gives you breadth and width if you don't know what you want to do. But if you're absolutely sure you want to be a concept artist, character artist, or prop artist, and that's all you ever wanted to do, then self-taught with focus and dedication is probably the best path because you can then just go straight line it to where you need to go. But unis then will give you that wide view if you don't know what you want to do and expose you to the different aspects of production, the different types of roles. Like you might go into university wanting to be a 3D artist and come out a producer because you've realized, actually, I really love project management instead. That's more my passion. And that's what I think, yeah, uni's good for, is to expose you to that with like-minded people to open different kinds of doors or views. But you don't get as self-taught because you're isolated.
So Anthony, how was it back in the days? Like, were people from unis or were there also some self-taught people
Oh,
back in the days
loads.
when you
Most people were
started out?
self-taught when I started. So many. I think when I...
Because there were no game
None.
art
None.
studies, right? There were
I'm fairly
nothing.
sure most people in the 90s came from different art industries. They would have come from architecture, they would have come from engineering, they would have come from movies,
Movies.
or even then, movies didn't have much in the way of college and university.
True, yeah.
Like for me, what I studied was animation. I studied classic animation. It was a completely different subject. I was more focused on 2D, visual language, composition, life drawing. That was my first few years. I didn't touch a 3D program to near the end. And that's only because the industry shifted and the
Crazy.
course changed while I was there. I think from people I've worked with since 2007 across various companies, many were self-taught or at least came from tangential industries which had either 3D, like CAD backgrounds. Like I've met people who grew up designing cars and CAD and engineers, and then they just moved into games because the skill set was semi-transferable. So And then also people who came from like 2D
Crazy.
backgrounds or stop motion animation backgrounds. We have an animator, our lead animator here at D3T, who used to work on classic stop motion animation cartoons and then moved into the 3D stuff. So it's varied, basically. But I think nowadays, obviously, there's going to be a higher percentage of people coming from universities because games is popular as a subject. To be honest, universities make money because it is an attractive subject.
True,
And that's why
absolutely.
most of them are like a business. They just want to get you in, get your money, get you out the door with a portfolio, regardless of quality in some cases. And, that's a business for them and that's their right to do so. But you need to know what you need and want. And do your research for people who want to go to university. Look at the quality of the course, how many people get jobs at the end of it, and just go check the portfolios or speak to industry professionals and get a view on a college and their course content to see if it's fit for you as well. And that's to me, that's the student's responsibility. A university's responsibility is not to get you a job. It's to educate you and give you a knowledge.
Sure, that's never the
Well,
case,
many
right?
students think that's the opposite. And this is where I think you
Yeah,
need
I
to get
don't
your
get it.
mindset right. You need to understand what your responsibility is. You as a person will never look after yourself better. You're the number one person for you. So I think it's ultimately the student's responsibility to choose the right path, to put in the effort, seek out what they need to know, whether it's additive to university or self-taught or whatever. It all comes down to it's on you. No one else can do it for you. And I said this recently in the portfolio talk I gave earlier in the year and on a resource I put online that it literally is you. You're the one person to drive all this. And, many people nowadays, but I'm trying to generalize, I've met a lot of young aspiring artists that just kind of feel like, oh, I've graduated now. I have my degree. I should just get a job. It's like, that's not how it works. That's the
No,
work has to be there
no.
and the skills have to be there and the knowledge has to be there.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned it also the other part that people need to be self-aware about how they are as students. And apart from the fact that, of course, uni is not going to ensure you a job at all. But it might be that uni is interesting for you because maybe because of your personality, because maybe you are a person that feels more comfortable having X amount of guidelines and being sure about what you are requested and what you need to do, and maybe trying to search for things on your own, you feel completely lost because maybe you don't know how to start or what to start with. So it might be that in those cases, uni or whatever kind of teaching program that is a bit more organized at least gives you that mental peace in which you know, okay, I'm going to work hard on this specifically because it might be that your mind gets like busy with so many stuff that you can get anxious with that and you cannot move on. But there's other kind of people that it's the other way around. They are quite how do you say like they are quite interested on checking many stuff, testing that stuff they read or saw about straight away. And there is people that need to have the confirmation first that that's important to know or that that's necessary for them to know. So yeah, I think that plays a role as well.
So Paula, as you have been working down in the trenches and are now a lead artist, how has the time changed for you? Like, what is your do you see things now differently? Maybe you can understand leads better or art directors. So how has this like changed for you?
Anything you say will not affect your job. I'm just going to say that for clarity.
Said my art director, yeah.
Woo! Be honest, be brutal.
I guess you mean more like from senior, for example, into lead, right? Not specifically.
Exactly. More from a production, like from a production artist to more like a
Yeah,
lead
I think
artist.
this relates a lot to the soft skills part that I mentioned before. Because and I think this is a mistake that many artists make at some point of their career, that whenever they get into senior role, they think that the next step automatically needs to be becoming a lead because it's like, okay, yeah, more salary, the next step is going to be a lead. And it's important to understand that the next step after being senior, it doesn't need to be lead at all. You could stay a senior for many years, and that doesn't mean that your salary is not gonna increase. It can increase over time either way. Or maybe you want to become a principal artist. But what it's important to know is that the lead role implies soft skills that maybe they are not that required in other roles. And I think this is really, really important to understand, because I think, and I know a lot of people that made this mistake thinking, okay, next step, lead. And after a few months in the role, they regret extremely, because they don't feel that comfortable talking to people. They don't feel that comfortable trying to solve people doubts or people issues. They are not comfortable trying to explain things to others. They are just comfortable doing their art with their headphones, focusing in their music, and that's it. So I think as a lead, it's really, really important to be aware that super important part of your role is to be in touch with people, trying to express yourself correctly, letting everybody know what are you expecting from them, what are they required to do exactly on that task. If you see that they don't have that clear, try to explain it to them as many times as you need. If you see that they are struggling with something, try to give them advice or paths to be able to tackle it, or even decide to assign someone else to have them, help them out if you don't have that time. But basically, as a lead, you are a problem solver. Sometimes even you are more a problem solver than an artist. Because maybe you don't have that much time to create content anymore. Mm-hmm. Of course, it depends on the size of your team and the deadlines and everything. It could be that as an artist, as a lead artist, you still create some art. But it's not that the priority anymore. Like, art becomes something a bit secondary, I think, at least art creation. And I think you need to learn to delegate a bit more in your team. And for that, to be able to delegate nicely in your team, I think you have to be able to express really good what you need, what you expect. Because if not, you are going to feel that you're not able to delegate because you're not getting the results you're expecting. So, and I think that's on you as a lead to do that. So, yeah, the difference with art creation strictly, I think, is more that how important soft skills are. Not only what you tell to people, but also how you express that to people, because the tone, the words you use to express that, the way you communicate with your team is going to evoke in them a complete different reaction. And I think it's really, really important to give feedback in a really constructive way. And make sure that your artists are not afraid of receiving feedback, but on the other hand, that they see that as an excuse to grow and be better as artists. And what I always try to do in that regard is every time I need to give feedback to someone, try to point out not only what it's wrong or what could be improved, but also mentioning, hey, this is good, this looks nice, well done. And then you bring up the negative parts, no? Or, well, the negative parts, the things that could be improved, you know? Because I think you automatically have your artist in a better mental position to be open to receive that feedback. So it's a lot about constantly try to, I think, make your team try to be comfortable and see out of the feedback as a learning and as an excuse to become better rather than a punishment or whatever. And yeah, and as I said before, just be approachable. Of course, you need to also be a lot in touch with producers because times and deadlines are really important in game depth in the end. And like I always say this, like, perfection is infinite, but you need to try to do things look the best possible in the time you have. So it's really important that you're constantly measuring time versus quality and basically be in touch with other departments, make sure that everyone is aligned, that none of your team or even your whole team is isolated from other departments, because in game dev, things are quite interconnected. And art is not only that one thing looks nice, but it also has to be performant. So it's important to make sure that things are optimized in one way or another and this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because the other thing I'd add to that, which obviously excellent description of the job, because that's exactly that. And obviously the team and time is definitely priority one, but also it's, as you said at the end, it's kind of coordinating with other departments, because a game has to play well, right? And that doesn't play well if you don't speak to design, don't speak to engineering, don't speak to the various people involved in making the systems work, getting the VFX on top of your work, the lighting, everything. And I think that's when you get to the lead level, and then also with art director, the big thing is delivery, because in the end, games is a business. We all want to keep our jobs. To keep the industry moving, we need to get games out. Games don't get out if you've bad production practices or can't deliver something on time to actually make a revenue, to make it sustainable. So I think the industry at the moment, I mean, I'm going to touch briefly on the whole layoff situation, but definitely a part of that, even though it's obviously big economic stuff and factors outside of the industry itself, I think a lot of companies could do themselves big favors by improving production processes, improving how they manage these teams, set the deadlines, how they lead them and guide them to get games finished. And as we said earlier on, with planning for a student or whatever, doing art tests or the portfolio, as Paula mentioned, planning is super serious to make sure you can get something done on time and balance the quality with that. I think people have forgotten that in the industry at the moment, and you end up with these massive bloated projects that take way longer than they should and are more complex than they need to be. So I think the industry itself can take that advice at a bigger scale and apply it to companies.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You did a fantastic, you have a fantastic answer, Paula and Anthony. So do you miss creating more art, or are you really enjoying that? I assume you enjoy it, because then you wouldn't do it. But do you sometimes miss like just putting on your headphones, pumping up the music and just work and just have a nice task that is not too complicated but not too easy?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know, Anthony, if you want to go first or shall I?
I'm just going to say yes. Yeah. Basically, the way I'm at now, I've accepted that I cannot do stuff on project per se, even though I do a lot of pipeline support, setting things up, directing the team, art direction. I tend to very rarely take tasks unless I have time to do so. So to balance that, I end up scratching that itch outside of work. So I've recently been doing a lot more 2D work and 3D work outside of work at evenings and weekends in between everything else going on. And I find that's enough for me, because then I can explore art, new processes, technologies and workflows at a slower pace that I'm happy just making it for the reason you said, just get back in, headphones on and make the work. When you're at lead or art direction level, you very rarely have time in between meetings, planning, people reviewing, making sure the project's steady, there's ad hoc fires every day of stuff exploding and needing help. So I think it's just unrealistic to take something. But one of the ethoses we have at D3T is we do like, and Paul will probably get to this in a minute, we like that leads can at least do 40, 50% of the time on tasks at different points during the development where it seems sensible, and they have capacity to do so, because keeping your hands on the tools, in the pipelines, and using what the team is using gives you better insight to help them, to guide them, to support them. Because if you're two steps removed and someone has a problem with a pipeline, you're not going to be much help to guide them. But that also means you don't have to be doing it every single day, day in, day out, and doing it five times a month. It's just once is enough every couple of months, just to keep yourself kind of attuned to what the team is dealing with.
Yeah.
Yes, do I miss art? The answer is yes. Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I miss it too. I mean, at the moment, I cannot complain at all, because I'm having the opportunity to create art after a while without, because when I was a 3D director, it was absolutely impossible. So yeah, I'm being able to enjoy going back to art creation. I know that eventually I will end up having more reviewing tasks and more calls, more meetings, etc., and it will probably get reduced a lot. But that's what I like of the role, like being able to switch from time to time. And I even when I was just a senior and I was constantly doing art, I think it's good to, for me at least, it works really nice to be able to switch. And I think the ideal format would be to do 50-50 of both. Most of the times as a lead, if you have a wider team, it's absolutely impossible to go 50-50. So, but even with a 10% and 90%, I would be happy as well. It's more or less what Anthony said, like it's just to not get rusty, basically. And that doesn't mean that if you don't do art, you are going to stop learning, because in the end, you are reviewing your whole team and you can guide them as well and ask them, hey, test this, test that. And that you're also growing as an artist by doing that. But it's true that if you are not hands-on, you just get a bit rusty. But it comes back really, really fast. Huh? Yeah. It's just about investing a few hours on it or a few days on it and you're fine again. So, you know, it's just important to not lose it completely. So if at some point you are in a situation in your job in which is absolutely impossible, as I think it's for Anthony now, I think that doing it outside the office is really welcome. Because at least you calm that anxiety to do, because as artists I think we have also that anxiety for art creation as well. So I think I'm quite social in general. I love to be surrounded by people. I do think that you learn extremely out of colleagues. So being in touch with them, for me is super enriching. And I miss doing art, yes, but I wouldn't change this kind of role, not for the moment at least. I don't know what will happen in 10 years, I don't know. But at the moment, I'm super happy with having both universes together.
Yeah, you made a good point there as well, that when you get to that point of reviewing other people's work and kind of really digging into other people's art, like I've learned so much just from looking at how other people approach modeling. I think actually me and you mm-hmm. got into this a few mm-hmm. weeks back. You were working on something at D3T and you took a different modeling approach than I would have, and I was like, oh, I never thought of that. That was really interesting. And again, there's no right or wrong answer in game art, but it was really fascinating to see something different that I've not seen in years, and I was like, wow, that's really cool. So I kind of take that, file it away, yes, I'll use that next time. So stuff like that is I found has actually really progressed my eye, my understanding of the different art forms and crafts within games. And because, as you'll experience soon enough, and I have, once you get to lead and AD level, you then have to deal with character art, UI, VFX, concept art, levels, props, everything. So by doing that and having that knowledge base, you need to be able to understand each discipline and craft at their level, and being able to dig deep in all these different departments has been really beneficial as well to help me with my anatomical knowledge, understanding the facial action systems, understanding how hair cards are built. Like, even though I'm not directly doing any of this in my portfolio, I've spent the last few years really deep diving into all these different crafts, and I've definitely picked up a lot. Now all I need is the time to exercise some of this would be great. But yeah, the actual knowledge is now there. So I almost look at it as like the best training is getting to kind of lead an art director level, because that's when you actually learn the most. Mm. That's not when you peak. That's not when you go, oh, I'm done now, I know everything. Actually, it's the beginning. It's like you finally get to the top of the mountain and you realize there's a whole other mountain right there. Because that's what happened to me when I went from lead to art director. Kind of realized, okay, I'm really good at all the things I did do, and I'm confident in everything behind me. But now I've realized this whole other world out there and this whole other range of skills that I never even knew existed. So it's been an uphill climb ever since. I'm still going.
Yeah.
Still going. We'll all still be going forever.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I that's what I think. How will there be like 55-year-old art directors? Will they?
But they exist now, right? I think.
Yeah. But there are not too many, but there are.
I don't think there is an end. I think you just learn different things, or you become a studio art director, or you go create your own IP, or they just take all that knowledge and focus it somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So we find out, come back in 20 years.
A long way to go. All right. Anthony, Paula, thank you so much. It has been a fantastic talk. We hit the 1 hour mark. By 17 minutes, so that's cool. Perfect. So thank you so much for taking the time and being
thank you so much. Awesome.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invite. It's been great.
I will put your show notes or your information into the show notes, into the info box, and people should check you out. And I'm pretty sure this won't be the last episode with the both of you, because I really liked it, and I think there are so many other topics to speak about. And
likewise,
take care.
Yes,
have a great Christmas,
thank
everyone.
You. Make sure you get some gaming in.
Bye bye. Oh yeah.
Likewise. Definitely. See you.